The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Wednesday. Gary, what's up?
Well, it was back and forth in Iowa yesterday.
They stepped up. After many years, they stepped up to the plate. Their president is a great gentleman. We had a great talk over the last couple of days and met with their people. And we have things that we never thought possible. We got things that we never thought possible. They go from one thing for a lifetime, and then they flip, and they go to something totally different, the opposite. And everybody forgets in 2 or 3 days, and they're stuck to a new thing. Then they usually flip back, you know. Depends on which race they're running in.
The tax cut he passed for multimillionaires and billionaires. Guess what? When I'm president, it's gone. It's gone. I don't want to punish anybody. While Trump is tweeting, China is making massive investments in new technologies, in artificial intelligence, in 5G. They're going to, you know, while he's tweeting, they're not sitting still. No other country is.
The Democrat Party is really now the Socialist Party. The Democrats have never been more out of touch with the mainstream. They're totally out of touch.
So there you go. Well, there you go. I mean, it's a little bit of the campaign. Now, the two audio cuts I was looking for, I couldn't find from the service that I have. I'll see if I can find it from the full remarks yesterday. But the two things I want is Biden promising to cure cancer. Now, right. I will tell you. I mean, people might wonder what beats Make America Great Again.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to cure cancer.
Sure.
I mean, you got to find something that tops Making America Great Again, and so you go right for the one
right
that Americans would jump up. Well, Biden's promised to cure, I mean, Making America Great, fine, but Trump isn't promising to cure cancer. We got to vote for Biden.
Well, and you know, obviously the connection with his son Beau, who passed away, Biden is going to be on that as a cause. But I guess my question is do the American people think that the federal government is going to be behind the cure for cancer? I mean, that's just an open-ended question. Do they really believe that the federal government will do it, or will innovation, will the labs do that? Are there enough people thinking that the federal government should fund those labs and more?
We haven't yet cured cancer. We have made efforts of keeping people alive and comfortable and slowing down the cancers. Who knows? In the next 50 years, we may have a cure for cancer.
Right.
It's using it, and this got nothing to do with his son, it's using it as a political promise that under my administration it will be cured.
Right. Well, it's...
Because you've elected me.
Yes. The way I was thinking earlier, because he has said this before, before he announced, it was, I don't know, a year or two ago, actually, he talked about it after his son Beau died. He had talked about it, and they said, well, if you did run for president, what would you want to do? And we talked about it then. All right, so it's one thing to be an advocate for that, and I don't know anybody who's an advocate against that in terms of the effort to cure cancer. But to throw it into your political promise, and that's different. That's very different. Because, realistically, what do you expect from your federal government? Well, the roles of the federal government, think about what the current president is doing, the attempt to secure the borders and to get out of the way of business so that business can flourish, with the huge exception of tariffs, of course, which hopefully will be remedied soon. Lowering taxes, doing away with policy that was very costly, all these things. again, I don't know that the cure for cancer fits in the political realm at all for most people.
Well, it's not, forget about being in the political realm. I'm not even going that far. It's a promise he can't keep.
That's my point.
I mean, it's just if you vote for
the federal government to do that
I'm not even going. You're going further than I'm going. I'm not even going that far because if people actually believe that a particular president could cure cancer, they would say put all the money into it because this guy can actually cure cancer. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to the part of whether it's the federal government's job or not, or whether it should be more states.
Well, that was my point, too. I mean, do they believe that he's going to be able to fulfill a promise like that?
No.
That's the whole point. And the answer is ridiculous. Absolutely not.
No. And then on the other hand, Trump going back to the old ethanol thing of how ethanol is great and putting people to work and all that crap.
Mm. Yeah.
He used it in, remember, he said you needed, remember back in 2015, 2016, you have to, you absolutely have to support ethanol or you won't win Iowa.
Right.
Well, Cruz didn't support ethanol and Cruz won Iowa.
Yeah.
With Republicans.
Right.
This is the problem. You know, this is when we look at the president here, this is the problem we've always had. The president likes the subsidies that he likes, that he believes will be politically advantageous. As a conservative, you say, nope, sorry.
Right.
This is the whole thing with the infrastructure plan and why we've been against the infrastructure plan. We don't care whether Trump does it or whether Nancy Pelosi does it or whether Obama does it or Trump does it. You're flushing money down the toilet. Let the states take care of it.
Right.
Let the states do it. And this is the big, you want a big flaw with this president. That's one of the biggest flaws, is that he likes to spend a lot of money. Now, he'll sit there and say, well, okay, we've cut back in the departments, but the departments spend, as a share of the federal government, a minuscule amount. For the president to immediately, when he sat down with Pelosi, now I don't believe it's going to happen now, but the fact when he sat down and said, hey, I'll go for $2 trillion, and then backed off on it on that,
right,
when he got criticism for it. But it's that this president still loves spending taxpayer dollars in order, if strictly for political reasons.
Right.
And if you claim you don't want to be part of the swamp, then you don't do swamp things.
Yeah, right.
And the president with ethanol is a swamp idea. It's, I can stay in power if I spend your taxpayer dollars to produce a product that cannot make a profit on its own, is not being requested by the American people. I'll request that it be available in levels that will do damage to many gasoline engines, and I'll call it a good thing because the federal government should be using taxpayer dollars to put people to work.
Right.
Well, you might as well be a Democrat if that's your philosophy there. How can I trust you on your philosophy elsewhere?
Well, the question I would have is, okay, where else are we going to put money? What other industries are we going to throw money?
Well, remember, that's the infrastructure thing the president has also talked about. That's putting people to work too.
Mm-hmm.
That the government, on infrastructure and things like ethanol, the president is no different than any Democrat over the last 20 years.
Right. Right.
And that's the bad, that's, as Ben Shapiro would say, that's bad Trump.
Right.
Because it's not the government's job. It's not the federal government's job to take money out of your pocket and figure out where to put it in industry in order to pick the winners and losers. Remember, that used to be a Republican cry. That used to be a conservative cry. It's Democrats that take money out of your pocket to try to manipulate and run an economy.
Mm.
And it's wrong. And everybody who's listening right now, I don't care how much of a Trump supporter you are, you know it's wrong. And he shouldn't be promoting it. That simple.
Mm.
So, but then again, as we've said before, the Republican Party is moving away from maybe I shouldn't say any Republican or anybody who supports Trump, but anybody who calls themselves a conservative. You're not a conservative if you support what Donald Trump supports on ethanol.
So, you're not. All right, so
and on infrastructure.
A number of things have become excusable or allowable, I guess, since 2016 or during 2016 and after. The party itself moving further left on items similar to this. You also have, of course, very few in the Republican Party that care, relatively speaking, that really care about the national debt. That, I mean, really are screaming about the national debt.
Republicans don't care.
So my question is something like this even a thing anymore?
No, it's not.
I mean, if the national debt isn't.
No, it's not.
Ethanol subsidies don't even come close.
No, it's not. It's not. The infrastructure isn't.
Right. Looking at the map, the general election map, and Trump won Iowa 51% to Hillary's 41%. So you look at that and I wonder, and of course, again, he was promising back then, you know. Now, he didn't win in the primary. He didn't win the state.
No.
But as we pointed out earlier, but I just wonder how much of that is excusable by people who used to scream about it. Look, it's a fact. There were a great number of people on the right that used to scream about the national debt. Crickets.
Wait, when Obama and the Democrats came up with infrastructure jobs program number one, mm-hmm. that was $840 billion?
Right.
The Republican Party had a political stroke.
Right.
Our phones never stop ringing.
Right.
He meets with Pelosi. We hear he's at $1 trillion. She's at $2 trillion. He says, no problem. $2 trillion's fine. Not a blip.
Right.
Not a blip of complaint. It's okay to have a huge federal government as long as the guy that we like is spending our taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm. As the president has even said, to put people back to work.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's no different than what the Democrats said. None. That's no different than what Obama and Biden did.
Right.
And so, yeah, so cure cancer, bogus. On one side for Biden. On the other side, with President Trump, the ethanol, bogus.
Yeah. Right.
Very simple. Should be doing it.
And at some point on the ethanol, I mean, you're going to get to a point of, because you talk about the increase of blends and everything else. At some point, you're going to get to the real pushback because there is damage that is done.
Oh, I know.
But at the very heart of it, the mandate itself, the federal government telling me that I must use it in my vehicle. Wow. No. Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a choice.
Well,
you want to put it out there. If the market wants to use it and there's a demand for it, then the market can put it out there and let it go. Let it run. Great. If it takes off, if it's doing well, if it's performing, if it's doing all the things that are beneficial, making vehicles more efficient, if it's not damaging components, if it's working, great.
Well, this is a program. Remember, we bashed Bush when he signed it, when the Democrat Congress passed it and Bush signed it.
Mm-hmm.
We criticized him severely for that. That would have been December of 2007. By March, even Democrats had come out and said, we just found out that from farm to tank, ethanol actually pollutes and even more. It puts more global warming gases into the atmosphere. It does the opposite of what we thought it was going to do. Al Gore finally admitted in 2010 that he lied about it
in order
to get elected. Well,
right.
Yeah, ethanol actually isn't good. So it doesn't improve the environment. It's not a product that Americans are asking to be put in their gasoline, except probably for the requirements for a little bit of it for anti-knocking purposes.
Mm.
But nobody's asking for 10%. Nobody's asking for 15%, except the ethanol farmers. So it's basically the government taking your tax dollars just to put people to work to produce a product that nobody is demanding. You want liberalism? That's liberalism.
There you have it. Yeah.
You want socialism? That's socialism.
Yep.
And Republicans now are just completely and totally silent on it. Just silent. You don't go to conservative publications. They're not boasting the fact that the president is promoting ethanol because they're against it. But they know we can't say anything about it because we'll upset the base.
Right.
I don't care. It's wrong.
Right.
Either it's right or it's wrong, and what the president's doing on ethanol is wrong.
Yes.
So there you go. Also coming up on the show.
The endorsement.
Oh, the AOC endorsement. Yes. We got to talk about that because that's just... Can you imagine being part of a political party, the Democrats, where you're actually searching to have somebody like AOC's endorsement?
Yes.
Somebody who's completely...
We've been saying it.
Somebody who's completely and totally 100% clueless on anything, has no idea how the world works in any way.
We've been asking, okay, would she endorse anybody? And is it necessary in 2020 to get the nomination? Do you need her endorsement?
We'll tell you about trans activists who are very, very upset because of a BBC film coming up, a documentary promising to tell both sides of the trans athlete debate, narrated by Martina Navratilova.
Wow. Yeah.
Alan Dershowitz says the Mueller report should have never been written. Okay, where are we going there? David Axelrod, Biden is playing into a former Obama advisor.
Yeah.
Biden is playing into Trump's caricature of being weak mentally. Now, remember, this. I just wondered whether people that worked in the Obama administration, close, you know, allies and advisors to Obama, look at Biden and say, oh, man, no way.
Right.
We dealt with him. We dealt with him every day. No, you can't have this guy. Trump is going to crush him.
Well, keep in mind, because if there were the confidence by Obama at that time, and everyone around Obama at that time in 2016, Biden would have run. Tell me how you would have outgoing President Barack Obama pushing for Biden to run, pushing the party to support him and him not becoming the nominee. He didn't run. He was pushed aside.
He was. That's a great point. So we'll get to that and more, plus your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, we would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Meanwhile, in Texas, the governor signs the Chick-fil-A bill into law, so we'll see what happens there.
Right.
That's going to end up in court anyway.
I think that's going to be decided in the courts, and I think it's going to be bigger than a state. I mean, obviously, Governor Abbott only has control of his state, and I'm sure he would support the decision that favors Chick-fil-A in the courts, but ultimately, I think it will be, I'm with you, I think it will be in the courts where that is decided. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
5 to 7 day rain totals put the bulk of the precip right around the Oklahoma, Kansas, and Missouri region with upwards of 4 inches of rain. That band of showers that'll see the most precip for the U.S. will extend into the lower Tennessee and Ohio valleys on up into the Northeast. Can't outrule a shower today in the South or in the Mid-Atlantic. As we get out to the west, though, it will be not only a dry week, but a hot one as well. Excessive heat will continue to build and grip much of the west from the desert southwest up through California and Nevada into the Pacific Northwest. It's all due to a ridge of high pressure expanding. Heat warnings, advisories in effect for today in a number of major metro areas. Portland will hit 96 today. That'll subside somewhat tomorrow, 85. Boise, 90 degrees today. Look for Las Vegas to hit 107. Phoenix, 111 degrees. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
We'll be right back.
you know they're guilty. Exoneration is not an option. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Eric and I just talking about the photos that went viral with actor Keanu Reeves, and yeah. when he is taking a picture with a woman, and I don't know if somebody must have noticed it or whatever, and all of a sudden this, it became viral, all the different pictures,
yeah, yeah.
where when he puts his arm around them, he really doesn't. You can
well,
see
he's got his hand open, and
his hand is open.
Palms and yes. they're open, and one of them his palm is almost up, but it is you can see it is a deliberate attempt to first of all make sure that nothing even accidental happens, but I think also to display that if anybody has that photo available and they're not cropping it or something, that there's no indication. He's the opposite of Biden. He's the anti-Biden. But I thought it was cool. There were a lot of the media was on that over the last couple of days because it went viral. But so John Wick, respectful. Now he kills hundreds of people as John Wick, but he's not going to grope them. he has a motorcycle company. I didn't know this. I just found this out by accident. They modify these the Arch motorcycle, and they've been using some of them in movies. They're like modified Harleys, and so they look pretty cool. I'm not a fast motorcycle guy. I'm more of a cruiser, but they look pretty cool.
When I was a teenager, and probably even into my early 20s. Mm. There was nothing more that I wanted than a motorcycle, especially in my teen years.
Right.
When I was in high school, there was one kid that had a motorcycle. You know, he was 16, and mm-hmm. he got his motor, and he would park it, on the street every day. And I remember going past that I wanted a motorcycle more than anything in the world.
Right.
And I never got one. I never got a trail bike, but I had a friend of mine who had a trail bike that I used to use all the time. And that was great, with the helmet, but
sure.
never had a motorcycle on the street. But I would fantasize about traveling across the country on the motorcycle. I just thought it was and I think it came out of my love for go-karts the go-karts and mini
sure.
bikes that
right.
that my
right.
friends, all my friends had, but I never had one.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, all of a sudden when I got to be in my 20s and lived in different cities, I wouldn't have a motorcycle and drive it on a normal road if you paid me $1 million.
You know, one of my friends, when we were living on Laughlin Air Force Base, had one of the smaller dirt bikes, not a mini bike, but the kid-sized dirt bikes.
Yes.
Right?
I remember that. Yeah.
So my friend Mark had one of those. His dad got him one. I mean, it was the coolest thing. Now, we would take it out. Man, I never told my dad this. My dad was chief of police on that base, so I had to be really careful. But it was near Del Rio, but it was outside of town. So we would go out near the back gate of the base, and there was this dirt road that essentially ran kind of parallel to the fence. And there were these wild boar out there, lots of wild boar. And the trick would be, or the dare, I guess, would be, is that you would go out there and then you would wait for them and you would, because the noise apparently just annoyed the daylights out of these wild boar. And so, you would have, because the it had to be brought out like in a trailer or in a truck. So an older brother usually bringing it, helping you bring the bike out, but they were standing in the bed of the truck safely. And then, whoever the target is, whoever's up, whoever's turn it is, this is like dodgeball, whoever's turn it was, would get on the bike, and then you would rev the bike, rap, 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 those dirt bike sounds, right?
Yeah.
And then you would wait. Inevitably, it would happen. Not every day, but about 90% of the time, and they would come out. And then once they started chasing, well, the thing is that most of the ones we had seen first, were fairly small, I guess, relatively speaking. All of a sudden, this huge boar comes out. This thing was, I swear to you, he really was or she was as big as the bike, which again wasn't a full size bike, but I took off. Well, the rear wheel goes out from under me, and I'm struggling to bring it back. And, you know, you really got to pull it up in front of you. And I just finally I got it landed, and it took off. The bike took off, and I wasn't quite seated, but I was gone. And I was bouncing on that seat for, I don't know, a half a mile trying to get away from that boar. Stupid things as we that we
wow.
do as kids.
I had a less exciting story when I worked for a small radio station early in my career in East Texas. Mm. They got a trail bike that they were going to give away.
Right.
But it sat there for 6 months, and they never gave it away. It just sat in the back of the radio station. Mm-hmm. Well, back behind the radio station, it's all these woods and trails and everything else.
Right.
So finally I went, well, nobody's really around on a Saturday or Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go there on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. Nobody's at the radio station. It's in a rural area.
Right.
I brought a gas tank. I filled it up for like the next 6 months, every other weekend or so.
Right, right.
I'd take the mini bike out and try to clean it up as much as possible. And all of a sudden, one day, my boss comes to me and he says, you know, we want to give that trail bike away. And we got a contest and everything set. And the thing's all dirty. I don't know how it got so dirty. Could you go out and clean it up? It's like somebody's been riding it or something.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Really?
I don't know how that could happen.
How did that happen?
Sure, I'll clean it up.
It's outrageous.
And he came back to me later on and said, you were such a good sport. You know, you cleaned up that whole trail bike. And,
trail bike.
He said, you're really good. I mean, you do what's ever asked of you, and I'm really happy about that. Yeah, that's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah. You know, back then we could fill one of those huge 5 gallon tanks. I don't think we had a 5 gallon tank, but you could fill a tank next to nothing, man. What was it? 35 cents
just nothing.
Gallon.
Oh yeah.
And on base, I think it was a bit cheaper. I'm not sure, but yeah. So
and,
you could go all day.
And I saw gasoline down now to $2.20.
Yeah, that's what I paid yesterday.
Yeah, yep. So it will soon be beneath. And it's gone. It was up. What did it get up to? Like 270 here?
I think I paid 279 or maybe even 289.
Maybe 280. Okay. Yeah. 280 it got up to. So it's dropped. Gasoline's dropped 60 cents here in Texas. And the thing that's mind boggling about all of this is it's happening in the summertime.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, because driving season has begun. I know the week of Independence Day, a lot of people drive into vacation, but really, after graduation, a lot of families hit the road to stay out of the crowds of the Independence Day rush. And so the demand, obviously, is peaking, but prices are going down. And I hope that continues.
But, we started this off talking about Keanu Reeves and the motorcycle investment, but the pictures of him with women. Now, did he verify that those pictures are actually true?
I don't know anybody that's challenged it, and you can see the pattern in each of them. I mean, you can see it,
right.
And it doesn't look faked. I mean, I don't know anybody that's saying that's faked.
But. Yeah, neither have I. And it's where when he meets women and takes pictures with women, that probably happens every day. Mm-hmm. His arm, even though his arm is around them, you can see the palm of his hand.
Now, in one of them, he's holding a cigarette.
Okay.
So he's holding his hand kind of away, and in the index and middle
finger.
Well,
that
finger,
would make sense.
He's handing, that would make sense.
But in the other ones aren't there. I didn't see a cigarette. It was just, and people were talking about when you have that kind of money and knowing the litigious society that we live in today, I might be doing the same thing.
And one, he's got his arm around. It's a picture with Dolly Parton.
Yeah, I saw that one too. Yeah.
Dolly Parton's if you groped Dolly Parton, she'd probably giggle and say thank you jokingly. I mean, you know, she would just, if it was Keanu Reeves, it would, you know, not if it's me, but if it's, you know, if you did something like that or somebody made a claim, she'd laugh about it and brush it off, I'm sure. But it was very clear. I mean,
or gave her a little hug. I won't say grope.
Yes.
Because grope is that gets to the
Well, heart. I mean,
sexual
to the point
assault.
of placing your hand somewhere where, because for me, there's a lot of area that is clearly across a boundary, and it's not just the areas you would think. So, but he's got his hand open and the whole thing. So I thought it was funny. And somebody started the first thing. I don't know who put it together, but they started the first tweet saying, Keanu's not taking any chances.
Yeah.
Very good chance that he's just that guy and he's always been that guy. I don't know. Right?
Well, I saw the thing where the plane was delayed or something from an airport, so they got on a bus or a van and He apparently was the life of the party.
I mean, right.
He was really the coolest guy.
And, probably because of the movie Speed. So he probably asked him, hey, Keanu, would you? And he's, I've seen him in interviews where he has a lot of fun. These two guys that have this one website that really has a lot of fun with movies had him on, and they were talking about all the, you know, killing in John Wick 1 and 2 and the whole thing before 3 came out. And he was having fun with it. He was really having, really kind of getting geeky about the character and the whole thing and having fun going back and forth with those guys. So he seems to be a good sport about that.
You seen John Wick 3 yet?
I have not.
Yeah, neither have I.
And I'm dying to see it. I really am dying to see it.
I heard the body count is 150 to 200.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw that on social media. Someone posted
it. Well, I do know at some point I'm going to own it. I own the other two because it's one of those, all right, I want a popcorn movie. Boom, that's the go-to, right? So I know that eventually when it comes out for rental, I'm going to buy it anyway. But I really want to see it on the big screen because bullets are great on a big screen. They're much larger.
I just want to see how Jimmy the cop now responds.
Oh, man, you got to have Jimmy. What's going on?
Jimmy
you got to have
cop
Jimmy.
Is-
you know, and John Leguizamo. You know, you're gonna have to have.
You have got to.
You know, those characters, Lance Riddick, all of them. They all have to come back. What's his name from Deadwood? I forget his name, but who runs that hotel? You know, who basically tells him, you know, you're going to be
McShane.
Ian McShane.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's in it.
Oh,
he's
got. Yeah. So he's. They made a Deadwood movie. I never watched Deadwood on HBO. I just
and
saw
then the guy, the guy at the counter, you know, the hotel counter.
Lance Riddick.
Oh yeah. Okay, that's his name. Yeah, he said that he loves the part because it's completely different than anything he will ever play in his life.
Yeah,
which is true.
Let me see. He's basically. The concierge, right?
Oh, yes, exactly.
And we got to find out the value of each of those coins.
It's the Amaro.
Right. Riddick, not Riddick. I said Riddick. Riddick.
Riddick,
yes. Lance Riddick.
Yes.
He's also in Bosch on Amazon, which is also really great.
He's great at that role.
Yeah. No, he's perfect. He did
say goodbye.
Yeah,
I know he's in the third one. Remember, he said goodbye at the end of two. He said, remember he said.
Well, now I got to find out.
He said goodbye.
Now I got to find out. The other day he posted a picture on his Twitter page, Lance Riddick, and it was National Smile Day or something. And none of his characters ever smile because he's always like the boss. He's always prim and proper and never smiling. Mm-hmm. And he's always the boss. And he says, nailed it. And it's a picture of him, of course, not smiling, one of the character pictures, but it was funny.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up here in just following the top of the hour, we will get again back to the, you know, the whole thing of John Dean testifying, and one of the things that they were trying to make the case again, the roadmap to obstruction of justice for firing Comey. Dershowitz was on Fox last night and covered part of that. So was Sol Weisenberg, former deputy independent counsel, you know, comparing Watergate, you know, to what happened here. And they make some great points. So we'll get to that. Plus the lead article in the Drudge Report about and you see Elizabeth Warren and AOC together.
Is the
endorsement coming for Elizabeth Warren? And it was just an article telling them about how they've been seen together and how they get along so great.
Yeah, and they both went after Mnuchin. I mean, they have so you're going to see that with certain lawmakers, but obviously. This had Warren supporters saying, oh, we hope she gives her the endorsement. Okay, so there's a couple of things. Obviously, I think a lot of people had paired her, even us. We looked at it and said, well, I mean, I guess right now, if we were to, the natural endorsement, if she were to endorse any of them, it would be Bernie, right? I mean, mm-hmm. She spent a lot of time with him and everything else. And so Bernie would probably forgive her easily if she endorsed Warren, right? Bernie, oh, that's okay, blah, blah, blah. But because he's got a lot of give up in him, He gives up his microphone. He gives up to Hillary and endorses her in 2016.
He's not French.
And yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting. But I think it's a little bit early. My question is, are they putting too much into it just yet? Does she ever endorse any of them?
Yeah. I think they will be going for her endorsement.
I think they will be going for her endorsement. And does that push her to do it?
You made a point in our pre-show meeting.
Yeah.
When we were discussing it, because we have talked about, and we have evolved on this as,
right.
as she has gotten, you know, more news time
mm-hmm.
and more attention, that she will get a prime time Democratic National Convention
yes.
speaking slot.
We knew she would get some a speaking slot somewhere. It'll be prime time.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. Let me ask you this question here, because we were just talking about the Drudge Report story, the lead story in the Drudge Report. It shows AOC with...
Elizabeth Warren.
Thank you very much. I was thinking Kathleen Warren. I don't know why. It's like, that's not Kathleen. I'm sorry, there's just too many people involved running on that side. We tend to forget people here or there. But with Elizabeth Warren and, you know, asking the question, you know, will she endorse Elizabeth Warren? And then it goes on to talk about, you know, their relationship together and all that, and how Elizabeth Warren supporters are hoping that AOC supports her. And you and I were asking the question, has the party fallen that far where the coveted AOC endorsement is what they're all seeking? And then I thought of something right after we finished talking, and I said, I'm not going to tell Eric till we get on the air. I want to see his reaction to this or what you have to say about this. Besides AOC, who is a coveted endorsement in the Democrat Party?
Wow, that's a great question.
That's why I didn't. No. That's why I said I got to ask you on the
who
air.
Else?
Who else?
Who else would be? Oh my gosh, because it's not Obama.
No, they're refusing Obama. I wonder if O'Rourke.
Okay.
I wonder if Beto O'Rourke would take Obama's endorsement now.
Okay, hold on. They're refusing Barack Obama.
Barack Obama.
They're not refusing Michelle Obama. She's still a media darling.
Yeah, but her endorsement, she's not a politician.
Well, you're right. It doesn't go as far, but it's a little bit of star power.
But for political endorsement...
From the party. Let's say,
right.
From anybody who's ever been politically active in the party. Well, I mean, you know, she was first lady, so that... It's not Hillary. It's not Bill.
Who is a covet besides AOC? Who is an endorsement that any Democrat would want? Trump doesn't need any endorsements.
Well, it's usually the most recent president.
Yes,
from the party. Holy cow!
Now we know that Mitten seems to think that people care about who he endorses.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Robot.
Mitt Romney we're talking about.
You know, people are reprogramming him. That's the problem, man. He goes in, he sides with Trump. You know, we need the robot to get some political points, sides with Trump, gets elected to the Senate, and then burns Trump. That's because they're reprogramming the
office. Think about this. I'm trying to think of people that I'd say.
I don't know who it would be.
Now, I was even thinking on the Republican side. Now, this is just me, and nobody else may think the same way. But I'm looking at it and I'm thinking to myself, if, you know, again, I don't, Trump doesn't need any endorsements. But if Trey Gowdy came out tomorrow and said, hey, I endorse Trump, a lot of people would say that's cool.
Yeah, all right.
If Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows said that, same thing.
Right.
Now, they are prime, they have been the people primarily looking into the origins of Russian collusion, which gives them extra credibility, but at least the reason that people would want them would be based on the substance of what they are doing.
Right.
Besides AOC and the substance or lack of substance of what she is doing, because if you look at it, the really big thing for her is the Green New Deal. Become a socialist communist state is what, in essence, she has promoted, because in order to get to where she wishes to get, that's how you would have to transform our society. And she is the only coveted endorsement of anybody who exists in the Democrat Party. Because I'm trying to think who else, for example,
wow.
I guess, let me rethink this. I guess, for example, that when, you know, Bernie has to bow out because he lets everybody take the stage, that'd be interesting if he's giving a rally and Elizabeth Warren showed up and she came up and to take the microphone away from him, whether he'd allow that. Well, you have to wonder things like this.
Well,
you'll see that, for example. You'll see after somebody drops out, I will endorse this person. But it doesn't mean anything.
Right, yeah.
I think it kills me to say this, but I think that one of the most prolific things said in media in the last year, maybe 2 years. Oh, let me take a cup of coffee. If I'm going to have to say this, it's going to hurt me to give this person credit.
Yeah. Okay.
One of the most prolific things that has been said about the Democrat Party and where they are headed, that I can every day think about that and take a different offshoot of that, is something that you said a while back, which mm-hmm. is why it's killing me to say this.
Yeah, okay.
But no, we've both been on the same path here, and that's what identity politics has done.
Right.
But you took it one night, a couple of months ago, maybe it was longer, I don't know. Remember I told you I was telling you about an event that happened. I said, can you believe that happened last September? I'm like, time is flying. So I've lost complete track of any time.
Right.
But it's when you said that the identity politics has gotten so bad that even in Ocasio-Cortez, and you took this when she said, I'm the boss, and you said everybody believes now they're the boss. Everybody now, even right. in the Democrat Party, looks at the other person who doesn't agree with them as an oppressor. Everybody has become a victim, not just of Republicans, but of everybody else. And when you first said that, I went, whoa, okay, let's see if that continues. And it's continued to go in that direction
mm-hmm.
where you get to the point where really no endorsement is important anymore.
Right, right.
Except AOC's.
Right.
In the Democrat Party. I mean, it holds no water. People right. will laugh at it in the Republican
Which
Party.
But it is
viewed as the most serious endorsement that you can get in the Democrat Party right now is her. Anybody else, it's like, I don't care.
Counterintuitive because she doesn't need them.
No.
In terms of the, I guess, I don't know, liberal establishment, Feinstein, Pelosi. Keep in mind, on the whole,
think about that.
Where was the turn on impeachment for Pelosi? It came after Ocasio-Cortez called her out. Where was the turn with Amazon? It came when Ocasio-Cortez, because the headquarters was going to be in her district, it came after she went after them. Those are wins for her. Feinstein, the Gang of 8-year-olds that were in Feinstein's face about the Green New Deal. Those were minions from Despicable Me, almost quite literally. in her office, or, you know, in her face about that, Feinstein. And that's AOC. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, that, but that's the mindset. That's, she sees that as the win. It's critical thinkers know that it's not the win, because in order to get the real win, you've got to move much further. But those are political wins for her.
Well, she's the flavor of the moment,
yeah,
for the radical left.
Right.
She might not be a year from now.
Well, I mean, at one time.
She may be fighting for her political life in a year from now.
At one time, in another large movement, Martina Navratilova was the,
yes,
was the, I won't say poster child, that's the wrong word. But I mean, was someone who was the face of it. Because it was very, by the way, it was very early in that whole movement.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you might argue that was something very different and clearly more, you know, personal and more of a mission statement for.
Yeah, but AOC and the people that follow her look at Pelosi as an oppressor.
Oh, yeah.
Pelosi is keeping them from going where they wish to go. Schumer is keeping them from going where they wish to go. They're trying to find alliances right now with people that, you know, with people that agree with their far left ideology. And
right.
So she does bring with her probably 30%, maybe 40% of the Democrat Party.
All right.
She brings a huge number of people that I don't believe anybody can bring.
Right.
Look, Biden. Democrats are going to vote for Democrats. Republicans are going to vote for Republicans.
Right, right.
It's what you get. It's what you get in the middle.
And it's also the turnout. I mean, there might be Democrats, far liberal, that don't show up.
But we're just talking about the primary right now.
Right. Yes.
That they want her endorsement in the primary because they believe, they look and they go, that's 30% right there. And those people right now are extreme. They may not be a year from now, but right now they're extremely loyal to her. At this moment, she is the face of the radical socialist slash communist movement in the Democrat Party. And they look at the leadership and they reject the leadership. They reject Biden. They reject even Bernie. They have a friendly, fatherly figure. You know, they look at him as a friendly, fatherly comrade. but if he's gone, they don't care. And so who are they looking for? It would be somebody like Elizabeth Warren.
And, okay, so then take it further, and we said this in 2016. We said this in 2008, after Obama was elected. Tons of euphoria. It was a very different feel to the political season. But after 2000, after the election day, during the transition period, we said, okay, Democrats, he's going to have to do things that are presidential that you're not going to like. So let's take that even further. An Elizabeth Warren, or are they? They talk about decorum and everything else surrounding what is. It's not very presidential for Trump to do this, and I don't know. We can have that discussion, I guess. But on the things that he's actually doing, because those are things based on his words, things that he tweets or says. But on the things that he's doing, he's right in the mainstream. Elizabeth Warren, I don't know. I don't know if decorum applies to her, but whatever. Of course, with us, it is about what they do as president,
right?
And I wonder if the next liberal, if there is another liberal president, if it happens, whenever it happens, if they are to become centered on some things as a president. With the balance of powers, there are clearly some boundaries that they cannot cross. But I guess my question is, imagine Elizabeth Warren won. She got the nomination and she won the general election next year, January of 2021. By the way, it's not going to happen. January of 2021. This is all pure fantasy. January of 2021, she becomes president. She's given the Nobel Peace Prize February 2021.
for finally bringing peace,
yeah,
between the Native American tribes and the rest of America,
right? And then on April 15th of 2021, the Tea Party has their first big meeting in a long, 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 long time. But then she starts doing things. I mean, as president, and
let's say Ocasio-Cortez is still in office, and because my point is, there's not going to be, she's not going to have a problem calling her out. So what I'm wondering about this whole endorsement thing is what Ocasio-Cortez, how she sees it, because remember, I'm the boss. She doesn't need the hero. She's the hero. She's also the victim. And so does she want to endorse, because she knows full well, if you do something wrong, I'm going to call you out and I'm going to go after you. But it's a different kind of disagreement. Running, it's not Lindsey Graham saying, I disagree with the president, President Trump.
But isn't that what makes her, to a Democrat then, the valuable endorsement? Because she may not want to endorse anybody because of her philosophy that I'm the boss and I don't want to take a chance of endorsing anybody that isn't in lockstep with me every single day. For example, because there's a cost to her. Can Ocasio-Cortez endorse a Joe Biden?
No.
I don't think so. Remember, as we have said, everything fractures more every single day. The victims and the oppressors.
Right.
There's nothing that's going to keep her from falling into that same trap.
I don't think if Buttigieg was to rise, I don't think he would get her endorsement because of religion. I think it's between Warren and Bernie.
I was thinking of Kamala Harris, and I went, she can't get hers because Kamala Harris was in law enforcement.
Yeah, well, no,
remember, we're thinking about the radical left. We're thinking about in the LGBTQ pride marches that have just happened, the debate that went on where they didn't want, some of these marches didn't want the police to march. You could be part of the LGBTQ movement and a cop, and they didn't want you to march.
Right.
Then they said, okay, you can march, but not without your uniforms. And then some said, okay, you can finally march. But there was a huge controversy on it.
Right. No, that's a great point.
So you forget about the fact that, you know, maybe we look at it and go, well, the fact that she was in law enforcement doesn't change our mind. It's where she stands on the issues. But to the far radical left, it does. And to somebody like AOC and her supporters, it would.
Well, so then we got into the reauthorization of the Hyde Amendment last year. And remember, Beto and Warren and others, including Bernie.
Yes.
So from her perspective, does AOC just stay out of it and say, I'm going to support the nominee, I'm going to support the party, but I'm here for my causes, I'm going to fight for what I believe in, and not endorse anyone in the primary?
Howard Schultz? Oh, wait a minute. We haven't heard from him in about 2 months. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Need operating cash to get you through a rough spot? Big Rig Lending can help. Mike Frabel of Big Rig Lending tells us how.
Everybody hears Big Rig Lending and thinks we do financing. That's really not what we do. We're small loans, $15,000 and under. We are really built around repair loans, working capital, insurance down payments. I have recently, over the last 6 months, 8 months, seen an increase of new owner-operators getting into the industry. And we have tailored a few products around to help them as far as setting themselves up financially with enough working capital to get off the ground and get running. Right. We have what's called our 10-4 promise. That means we're going to take 10 minutes with you. You're actually going to talk to a person, one of our funding specialists. They will get information about your business, your truck, and yourself. And then you'll send 4 pictures. From there, they can send it to underwriting within a few hours, have you a pre-approval amount. So we can help all credit types. Credit is not a disqualifier with us. We fund in as fast as 48 hours, where most other lenders are 7 to 10 days. One of the things that helps us with that is we do our own underwriting and we are our own bank. So when we put the whole package together, we're looking at how long have they been in the industry? What is the truck value worth? What are they looking for? What is the repair? We're finding out all the different details that you can't find out just by a credit score.
For more info, go to BigRigLending.com. This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So, yeah, that was the lead story in the Drudge Report from an LA Times story. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dangles 2020 endorsement. Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. But it was just great just to ask all of those, you know, different questions and statements that we made. Because when you think about it, and I do think this is actually the political truth right now, there is no coveted endorsement in the Democrat Party except for AOC. It shows you how bad their party is. Think about this.
Man.
This is somebody who,
I can't
this
think
is
of
somebody
a celebrity was, endorsement, really.
No.
I can't think no, of... I can't. Really can't. But anybody who is either active or has been even recently active
how about
in the
Gerald,
party.
How about Gerald Nadler's endorsement? Would that do anything
yeah,
for you?
Maybe. Yeah, I'm guessing no. Well, where are the other stars politically that have done things in their party right now that have gotten things done? Where are they?
Join the Mind Meld, 1-866-90-RED-EYE. Back to Gary McNamara and Eric Harley.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. By the way, Buttigieg is, you know, we said this earlier, that the media was all over him saying he's the thoughtful, intelligent one. Yesterday saying that under Trump, America is now very much like Russia.
Right.
Which, of course, is just the complete... You jump to just bizarre political rhetoric instead of saying, look, I disagree with him on this issue and that 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 issue. That would be fine. But again, when you have to go, as all the Democrats have to go to, and again, we see where the Democrats are going in order to compete against Trump. Biden has to promote the fact that he's going to cure cancer. This is where we're at. It's going to be an interesting year and a half. All right, let's get to some substance here, okay?
All right.
I want to play this audio cut. On Fox News last night, Sol Weisenberg, former deputy special counsel, and Alan Dershowitz.
Okay.
As we all know, Alan Dershowitz, the law professor, constitutional law professor, a liberal, not a Trump supporter, who wrote the book, The Mueller Report. And John Dean, as we all know, and when this first happened, I know what my reaction was, which was when I first saw that John Dean was going to testify. I didn't know it was at John Dean. I saw the headline first.
Yeah.
And when I saw the headline, I went, John Dean? Former special counsel John Dean? I'm thinking because the president is tweeting about it this past weekend, that has to be somebody who worked for him. Oh, wait a minute. All he's got to do is claim executive privilege. Who's this John Dean guy? I don't remember a John Dean guy being the president's special counsel. I read the first paragraph. John Dean from Watergate fame. What? Wait a minute. You're kidding me. They bring in Michael Cohen, and okay, we brought in one felon. Let's bring in another felon.
Right. And the parade of felons.
And so I just said, look, they're going to rehash the same thing about obstruction of justice, and they did. And right. and this is where Dershowitz and also Weisenberg tear it to shreds, because they're still on the thing that, well, it's obstruction of justice for firing Comey. And let's hear part of the interview. This was on Laura Ingraham last night on Fox News.
Alan, Democrats are really pushing for Mueller's testimony. But isn't it possible that the GOP's case could actually be strengthened by his appearance?
It's possible, but there's no legal right to Mueller's testimony. There's no legal right to any of the Mueller report. Indeed, even though I wrote the introduction to the Mueller report, the Mueller report never should have been written. There's no room under our Constitution for special counsel, special prosecutors, reports. Prosecutors have the right to say only one thing. We have concluded that there is no evidence sufficient to charge the president with Russian collusion or obstruction of justice, period. I'm taking no questions. I'm making no public report. I'm giving my findings to the attorney general. No prosecutor should ever go beyond that. We all agreed with that when Comey went beyond that with Hillary Clinton. I don't understand the difference between the criticism of Comey for saying that Hillary Clinton engaged in extreme carelessness. Everybody criticized that. And then we want to know why Mueller didn't charge the president. It's the same thing. The whole enterprise of special counsel, special prosecutors, is inconsistent with the Constitution. I hope we've seen the last of it.
Now, Saul, you were watching John Dean's show yesterday where he was testifying on the Hill and purporting to draw a connection between the Watergate roadmap to impeachment and what Mueller's report represents. Your thoughts?
First of all, they're completely different, those two roadmaps. Jaworski and the grand jury were very careful not to make any arguments whatsoever, not to draw any conclusions. They just said, here is on March 17th, 1973, President Nixon had a conversation with these two people. Then they listed the tape recordings and the grand jury testimony that the House could go look at. Totally different than the Mueller report, which made a number of legal and factual conclusions. That's number one. But number two, more importantly, for the people who still believe that firing James Comey could ever be criminal obstruction of justice, the Watergate roadmap, which was all about obstruction of justice, right? That's what the grand jury indicted people for, never in any way mentions the firing of Archie Cox as an obstruction of justice. And I've looked at just about every book on Watergate. I don't believe Jaworski's people ever even thought about indicting anyone under an obstruction theory for firing Cox.
There is a precedent that's much closer, and of course nobody talked about it yesterday, and that's George H.W. Bush pardoning Caspar Weinberger, pardoning the five people on the eve of their trial. The special prosecutor in that case, Lawrence Waltz, said that was designed to stop the investigation, and it did stop the investigation. Nobody ever suggested obstruction of justice against President Bush.
All right,
that's the relevant precedent.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, they, as I've said, they're arguing the same thing over and over again and think that if they argue it more, that somehow you come to a different conclusion, and you don't. There is, this is a whole thing about the whole Judiciary Committee. They're not, all they're doing is bringing people that still agree with their side that we can stretch out and we can make law that isn't law, that we can make obstruction of justice what is not obstruction of justice. Mm-hmm. If we get enough people on our side to say it's obstruction of justice, well, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is, and it is, that really is the, has been the practice. Right after the Mueller report came out, you had Nadler and Schiff and others that, that kept saying, well, you know, we want to look more into the collusion that happened and the obstruction that happened. This was after the report came out. Not after the summary came out, after the report came out. And they kept saying those words. They kept using the words. Well, we want to look more into the obstruction and the, as if it were fact. Just say it as if it's fact. Because the real game here is, and Kimberly Strassel wrote the show, of course, for Nadler, but beyond the show, it is the hanging of the big doubt cloud over the president politically and hope that that does enough damage. And say things out loud as if they're fact. The liberal media is not going to call you on it. They're going to go along with the narrative. They helped write the narrative. They're still writing the false narrative. So you get a full rein. You get full rein. You can pretty much say what it, whatever you want, and you can change the attack or the direction of the attack, the focus of the attack in certain areas, and they've done that. Obstruction was, of course, firing Comey. Then obstruction became McGahn not showing up and after a subpoena was issued by Congress, and Barr not showing up after a subpoena was issued by Congress. So they changed the definition of words. They changed the cause behind it, the basis of it. But it's been the same game all along. They have nothing. The only thing you can do is state something as fact and keep stating it that way.
And the facts on the ground haven't changed. We've been talking about the facts on the ground even before the Mueller report came out.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mueller report didn't change the facts on the ground. They still haven't changed. And it's just if we can, and this is the point. You know that the facts have been changed because all they're doing is calling people in now who don't want President Trump to be president, who are agreeing with them that you can change the that you can change obstruction of justice to something that is not and never has been in this country obstruction of justice. And yes. It's like if we get more people in to keep saying the same thing, maybe we can move the bar. Not William Barr, but maybe we can move. There's this delusional thought that maybe we can make obstruction of justice out of something that is not obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring the point of both George Herbert Walker Bush and Iran-Contra and what happened there, where he pardoned all of them, and as the special prosecutor said at that point, well, that this stops the investigation completely. Nobody said that was obstruction of justice back then. And the same with Nixon and Archibald Cox when he fired. That wasn't obstruction of justice. And nobody said that that was obstruction of justice at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other things that were done, paying people to shut up, missing evidence, destruction of evidence, things like that. The only thing I want to talk about with, you know, when Dershowitz keeps going back to James Comey. The difference between James Comey and, I mean, Comey did a bunch of stuff wrong. He's not a prosecutor. He shouldn't have been holding that press conference to begin with.
Right.
But it's important to understand that Comey knew that he had to explain further what happened with Hillary Clinton because he was making it clear. And it was clear to anybody who's not a political hack, because we knew what Hillary Clinton did. Nobody was debating the behavior. Nobody.
Right.
Nobody was debating the part of the Espionage Act and the part of the Freedom of Information law that she was violating.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually knew what she did, and we knew what specific law and what sections of the law. And for some reason, I'm using my hands to explain this to you. We it's radio gear.
It's funny because when you did sections, you kind of like did an outline with the
yes,
two hands,
an outline
like a paper or something.
Well, we knew the exact section of the espionage
right.
law and went down to the sentences as to why what she did was against the law. Comey did that, and Comey said she was irresponsible because he knew he had to explain why the FBI would not prosecute her for clearly violating the law.
Right.
And his point was, yes, she did do this, and her behavior was illegal, but no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute it. And yes, she was extremely careless, which goes from the whole point of, was it gross negligence to extremely careless. Because they had to take that out because the gross negligence would have been the actual term used in the actual law for breaking the law, which is why that got changed in it. So that's the difference, and it's important to note the difference and the motivation. Because the motivation of Comey was he knew what law she broke, and he knew he was going to have to explain it somehow why she wasn't going to be charged. That was the difference.
Mm.
With Trump, there's never been, you can't point that out.
Right.
You can't make the case. You can't make the case on any president. You can't go to the obstruction of justice law and find that he committed any obstruction of justice. You could with Hillary. That's the difference. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90 Red Eye. So found the audio, actually found the audio from Joe Biden from yesterday in Iowa, and here was his campaign promise.
I promise you, if I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes America is we're going to cure cancer.
There you go. So I guess we shall see. Coming up following, he was talking about his son and people that have cancer and all that, but it was the promise that he made afterwards, which, wow. And yes, he's going to be hit on that probably for the next couple of days. It'll be interesting to see his response tomorrow on that. But also coming up here in just a little bit, following the top of the hour, we'll get some of your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE. A new report out there on online news from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism. Researchers found that most people would not pay for online news and that there's only been a small increase in the proportion of people willing to do so in the last 6 years. Now, the most interesting part about it, and Eric and I have talked about this before, because I only subscribe to one news service that I actually pay money for, and that is the Wall Street Journal. That's it. But they say even among those who do pay for online news, there is subscription fatigue. Many are tired of being asked to pay for so many different subscriptions. Now, I think back to my days when computers didn't exist, and I was first in radio, not even necessarily in talk radio, and I used to get 4 or 5 newspapers a day. And so I'd be spending $2, $3 a day to be able to do a radio show. Now, it wasn't even a news show, but that's what I did. And so even when I wasn't in radio, I did the same thing. But online, I don't know if I'm even willing to do that.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE, and the world, too. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Good morning and welcome. Thanks so much for being here. It was good to finally find the audio cut and play it at the last part of last hour. Joe Biden promising to cure cancer, and he did in the statement. And he was talking about his son and people that have cancer in general, and he was quite subdued when he was talking about it. But then he came out with that promise, which, again, he's going to be questioned on over and over again.
Right.
How do you know that you can do it? What do you know that we don't know? How much? Because that would be the next questions. You're saying you can cure it if you become president, because that's what you're stating. And we have sympathy. And we expressed sympathy when his son died.
Sure.
At that time, it had to be horrible to go through something like that. But he's promising, you know, we talk about candidates making over-the-top promises. Well, the next thing people are going to be asking tomorrow is, wait a minute, how do you know you can cure cancer? What are we missing? How much money? What is the amount of money that we need that in your term of 4 years or 8 years that you can assure us that, because that's a promise you're making. You promised. Because he said promise.
Right.
How will he answer that? Remember he was laughing at China just a couple of weeks ago. They're not competition. What are you talking about? They're not competition. And now they're serious competition. So, I mean, he's...
Because it doesn't fit as a political promise. It fits in a campaign where you obviously have that connection, that personal connection to it, and you say, you know, it is a personal endeavor to do everything that I can as a person, and I will do everything I can as a president to nurture the scientific community and support the scientific community in their endeavor to cure cancer. That's we get. But when you go over the top and you say, I promise, okay, the question then becomes, well, wait a minute, are you working or do you know people at research centers? I mean, are we getting close? Are we learning something? I mean, is there something that says that we might get much closer in the next 4 to 8 years, research-wise, assuming that these research labs had unlimited funding from the federal government?
And how much funding would be needed?
Right.
Is it just $5 billion?
Well,
Because believe me, you would have a ton of private sector money in there if they believe they had the cancer vaccine.
Right. And even beyond the money, just assume there was an unlimited amount of money. I mean, I know that's not the case reasonable.
No,
but
it's a legit question.
Is the technology there? Look, again, it just doesn't fit as a political promise. As a goal from an individual who clearly has a personal connection to it, and as president will promote that endeavor, absolutely.
Who doesn't have a personal connection to cancer?
Of course. And that's the whole thing.
Who hasn't had a very close family member or a very close friend who hasn't died of cancer?
And who doesn't want that cure as soon as possible?
Right.
I mean, I'm with them. That's great. But the political promise I don't want to say it's apples and oranges. It's just not one that you can keep. Nor should it be one that you make.
That you make, right.
Again, we know that that's a personal mission. We get that. We're with them on that.
Well, I think it's a personal mission for a lot of people.
Sure. And so, you know, as a candidate, everybody knows the story, his particular story. But, you know, as you mentioned, we all have stories. And it just, I don't know. It seems cheap.
Yeah, it does.
It is
because what it does is you're taking your personal tragedy and making it a political promise and saying because I've been affected by it with his son dying. I mean that's the
you're
that's
leading
the impression
people to
that
believe that you
can do it.
You
they cheered
can
afterwards,
do that. Right?
Like wow.
Again, if part of my personal mission and clearly will be part of my mission as president, that's not a promise, and I wouldn't put that in the same category as being cheap. That's something that belongs and certainly relates. It relates to him. It relates to everybody. Great. Fair enough. When you cross that line and give people the impression that you can do something about it, it becomes cheap.
If you become president, you can cure it. Which implies if you don't become president, it won't be cured if Trump remains president.
Right.
Well, how do you back that one up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard political promises before.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
I believe that's the first cure cancer political promise.
Right.
Has there ever been one? When you look back at the political rhetoric that has existed and things that had been promised before, and we've talked about it, that when you look, Trump promised to do things, but they were all things that were possible.
Right.
It is possible to secure the border better.
It's also within the role of the federal government.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
It is possible to make an economy better by less government interference and by letting people keep more of their money.
Right.
Those are all things that are possible. As we have stated before, the whole Make America Great Again was an economic issue. Now, the Democrats jumped on it. Oh, he wants to bring racism back, which, of course, was bizarre. It was an economic message that the president sent out. Anybody who doesn't, who says it wasn't, as we have stated before, is just a political hack.
Mm-hmm.
That was an economic message.
Right. Yeah.
We can bring industry back. We can make America great again.
It wasn't the racial thing. Oh, he wants to return to the time of racism. No. He's talking economics.
Right.
And so, though, when you think about it, and by the way, how much controversy there was on that, on those, just on those two issues and how they were perverted. And here you go, Biden. Really, when you think about it, Biden just out of the gate. Think how many gaffes he has just made in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then the latest one yesterday, promising to cure cancer if he's elected president.
Of all the things that aren't gaffes, sniffing hair. His numbers actually went up after that.
Well, as we've said, it's really when you look at it. I was in the conversation yesterday. By the way, part of this show written by Matt, my hairstylist. I would say barber, but he's actually, you know, he does everybody's. But I've been,
he does it with style. So,
well, not, you know, you look at my hair; it's just a mop top. But no, I've been going to him. First time, 19 years now, when I moved to Texas.
Right.
And it was the sports writer, Randy Galloway, who sent me to him. Here's a guy to cut your hair.
Yeah.
And Matt's just a great guy, great family, done very well for himself.
Yeah.
In his, and moved up. I mean, I actually travel a little ways to go see him, but
yeah, right.
But we have great conversations. And yesterday was just a great conversation just about, you know, everything that's going on. A lot of Russian collusion talk and everything else. And the funny thing is, he used to not want to, he used to, I think, avoid, not with me, but with other people. And he was telling me that he had a guy who went from being a Republican to a Democrat because he hated Trump. And they were having a discussion yesterday when he was cutting his hair. I'm like, really?
Wow.
Yeah. But you know, he does. I mean, he's a hair. He just fits. I think he fits me in between the women. You know, because the women, whatever they get done, then they go sit for a while, and that's when my appointments normally are.
Yeah, if they get a dye job, or if they're getting, a permanent, I don't know if
it wasn't the case yesterday, a lot of times I'll go in and it's like, okay,
all right.
But I told him, I said I would make sure that I would tell him that part of the show was written by Matt.
Here you go. Yeah.
So. And if I call him a barber, is that like insulting? I don't know.
I don't think so these days, actually.
Okay, is barber okay?
Yeah, no, I think the barber thing has kind of come around. Yeah.
I guess he's more than a barber because
he does
all the stuff.
Pretty much everything, right?
Right. Yeah. By the way, my hair is not dyed. I want to make and this is all mine.
Yeah. Right. Mine's not dyed, and what's left of it is mine. I have a bald spot, but I don't care. I was thinking about getting just a toupee. You know, Ted Danson used to wear a toupee on Cheers.
Oh yeah, yeah. Years. That was an episode where he showed it to Carla.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know they actually showed it on the show. I missed that.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Well, okay. Because do you remember the character Paul? Paul was one of the Bobs on Office Space.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember him on Cheers, though.
Yeah, the big guy.
Yeah.
Right. He was on, oh, yeah, Paul. And he slept with Carla.
Oh.
They all got drunk, and so she was so embarrassed. And he said, I'll tell you something embarrassing about me.
Mm.
And so he lifted it up.
That's not embarrassing.
Well, in the show,
okay, wait. For Sam alone.
That would have been,
she just
freaked out.
Right.
And so her sleeping with Paul was nothing compared to him wearing a toupee.
Right. Exactly.
It was like she thought she won.
Right.
Wow. But
many people think that I dye my hair because my beard is gray and my hair is brown. My dad turned silver younger than I am now. He went silver late 40s, early 50s, and I mean like silver. I didn't. I have my mom's side of it. My mom's twin brother, when he passed, still had a lot of dark hair. So,
but this will be interesting because with him saying something like this, what won't he say?
Right.
You know, people hit Trump for his rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that he promised to do as president, as we've stated over and over again, are quite moderate and quite reasonable. And it's funny because I met somebody about a month and a half ago and extremely liberal, hates Trump. But got into a conversation with him and just talked in a very calm way. And I said, yeah, but, you know, and I explained, he agreed with me on everything. And agreed with me that Trump really is not a radical. He just, at times, you know, bothers him by the things that he said. So we became friends on social media. It's like we never had the conversation before. He just backed a railing on Trump. It's the people on the left are really interesting. I can sit there and have a conversation with somebody on the left, and they're like, yeah, you're right. He, you know, Trump really isn't that radical. He's, you know, as we stated earlier, part of the, our complaints about Trump is when he acts like a liberal. And the ethanol thing yesterday is one of the times when he does, and infrastructure and promoting that when he did, that's not going anywhere. Thank goodness, but those are Democrat positions. And as we've stated, the president is quite moderate in most of the positions that he has held. If you look at the positions that have been held by moderate politicians over the last 50 years in this country. And so, but he has a, and we talked about this yesterday. We talked about the problem that he is, Trump is bigger than life. He is. He's just a bigger-than-life character.
Massive persona.
And he hasn't lost any of it. And you can tell by the excitement in people in his rallies, the Democrats don't have that. Even when, think about this, even when, you know, Biden was talking about his son and cancer in general, so it's not a happy topic. But when he promoted that he's going to cure cancer, he did it in a very, very, as we played the audio cut just before the top of the hour, he said it in a very, very serious tone as if we're going to do this. Well, just how far will he go now? You know, what will you promise in order to win? If you're going to promise to cure cancer, then what can't you promise? And if you don't get any pushback, if there is no push, there'll be pushback on the right. I mean, the stories are already out there. He promised to cure cancer. We're talking about it. I'm sure the left will just ignore it. That's something you ignore. It's like, eh, we're not going to bring that up at all.
Well, given the nature, you know, of his of Bo Biden, they'll ignore it. They would have ignored it anyway. It's not going to, because they don't, they really don't care. I mean, how many of them live in a fantasy world? To believe that any one president can cure cancer, can be responsible. By the way, I mean, if he became president and proved me wrong, I would admit it all day long and be very happy about it.
Oh, so would I.
But that's not going to happen.
Well, that, when you make a statement like that, you've got to explain why you can do it.
Right.
But if you can get away with promising that, then will he feel emboldened to say things that are just completely and utterly bizarre?
Well, just cure all the problems. Homelessness.
Exactly. Homelessness will be cured. Cancer will be cured. Sickness will be cured. This will be cured. Everything will be cured. If you promise to cure cancer, what can't you promise to do, especially if there's no blowback from the media that, look, you got to explain something like that. That's just ridiculous. Unless you can explain it. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So that's one way to look at the Biden promise. The other way is former Obama advisor David Axelrod expressed his concerns that former Vice President Joe Biden is playing into the caricature made by President Trump that has questioned the Democratic frontrunner's fitness to lead. Both Trump and Biden exchanged harsh attacks between one another on Tuesday as they both made campaign stops in Iowa, with the president telling reporters outside the White House that the former VP is weak mentally. appearing on CNN, Axelrod cautioned that Biden's light campaign schedule, when compared to those of other competitors in the Democratic field, left him open to such criticisms. I think that it is important for Biden to run an energetic campaign that dispels any of these caricatures. He hasn't had a very heavy campaign schedule. He has sort of played into the caricature, and I think he's going to have to come forward with ideas, and he's have to going to campaign energetically. He said that ahead of the Iowa caucus, people expect to see you. They want to interact with you. You have to be there. You can't do drop-bys and use them as a backdrop to attack the president. You got to do much more than that. So I think that's very important.
Yeah, interesting. 866-90-RED-EYE. Here's your forecast.
5 to 7 day rain totals put the bulk of the precip right around the Oklahoma, Kansas, and Missouri region with upwards of 4 inches of rain. That band of showers that'll see the most precip for the U.S. will extend into the lower Tennessee and Ohio valleys on up into the Northeast. Can't outrule a shower today in the South or in the Mid-Atlantic. As we get out to the west, though, it will be not only a dry week, but a hot one as well. Excessive heat will continue to build and grip much of the west from the desert southwest up through California and Nevada into the Pacific Northwest. It's all due to a ridge of high pressure expanding. Heat warnings, advisories in effect for today in a number of major metro areas. Portland will hit 96 today. That'll subside somewhat tomorrow, 85. Boise, 90 degrees today. Look for Las Vegas to hit 107. Phoenix, 111 degrees. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Pockets of Civilization. You can listen live on our app, in your app store, or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Let's go to Tom in Woodbridge, Virginia, about Joe Biden promising to cure cancer if he's elected president. Tom, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, I was interested in what you had to say about what won't he promise. And I was thinking maybe some of the things he needs to come out with, if that doesn't get him the support he's looking for, is that he'll make sure that a time travel machine is invented or an anti-gravity machine. Maybe.
Well, no, I have one. Instead of electric vehicles, like the Democrats have been promoting, we'll just beam you. We'll get the technology to beam you from here to there. Therefore,
transporter, so to speak.
A transporter, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that I don't seem to remember. I'm not a physician, but he didn't mention what kind of cancer he's going to be curing. I don't think they're all the same.
No, they're not. It's a great point.
And he's not mentioned whether it's, you know, breast cancer, lung cancer, melanoma. Mm-hmm. What exactly is it that all of a sudden he's going to be able to cure that in 8 years with Obama they weren't able to cure?
Mm. Yeah, well, in all this time, the medical community hasn't been able to cure it yet. So, that's a great point, though. Which are you talking about? Because that makes it even a broader fantasy promise.
Exactly.
Because it makes it sound like
and
you're saying all cancer.
False hope to a lot of people that are looking for hope. And if they even put a slight amount of faith in what he has to say.
Okay,
exactly. It's
just hit something there, Tom. I mean, I'll tell you right now. I mean, many of us, if not all of us, at some point have been connected to someone. And if someone had made that promise, you're thinking, man, I'm crossing my fingers. But you're building at least a certain level of false hope that there's going to be real work put to this. Remember, real work put to this. Not even to the effect that he would get to his goal, but that it would be real work and effort and consistent effort, and that won't be the case because he'll be president of the United States. And so it won't be something where he's on it every day again. So I think you make a great point. There are a lot of people that are going to be greatly disappointed, and it's based on a promise, on something you're going to do.
Political promise.
Well, again, there may be people that will be gullible and believe it, but most people look at it and say, most average people look at it and say, you need to be quiet.
Well, no, my point was not that he would cure it. But if you're going to promise that you're going to cure it, you at least need to show your work that you're doing it consistently all the time. And the fact of the matter is, he's not going to be able to do that. He's going to be president.
Well, no. And again, number one thing is you have to explain how it's going to be cured.
Right.
You have to explain if you're going. But to do what he did yesterday was just look, Trump has done some outlandish things. Nothing has compared to Biden promising. Because when I first saw the headline, I said, well, wait a minute. Then we played the audio cut last hour. It's like, no, he's promising to cure cancer. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's clear in his message. That was the message that he put out. So I wouldn't be surprised if he clarifies that today, well, what I meant was we will put more research and development and government dollars into it, and then you move on to the next thing.
Yes. Right. But that's not the promise. See,
that wasn't the course is not the promise. Right. But that's how you get out. Well, what I meant was
that's your excuse to get out of it. And again, you know, you may say it's splitting political hairs based on the circumstances, but it gets back to Biden's nature altogether.
Well, look, could he? I'm looking at a Democrat Party, and we said it a couple times last week, not political rhetoric, but when you look at the positions that they hold, everything from a man can be a woman if a man wishes to be a woman, to the Green New Deal, we look at it and we say the positions that they hold are nuts.
Yeah, right.
They're nuts. Mm-hmm. And so if Biden knows that, if he agrees with Claire McCaskill that the crazy Democrats are out there, well, then I can see him say, look, the people promoting the Green New Deal, we don't need the Green New Deal. We can start transporting people. We'll be able to beam people. Forget about high-speed rail.
Yeah.
We can beam people back and forth. We can beam you from New York to California at 186,000 miles per second.
Right.
We can beam you at the speed of light.
Your produce will still have dirt on it. I mean, it's the Biden approach. It's everything, a promise everything, and really promise nothing. Because you don't get specific. Well, he was part of the whole hope and change. Right? The dismissive attitude, the never really getting to a point of what he is about. And if you call him on something he's done in the past, oh, no, that was then, that was. Or if he states something, oh, yeah, I support this, gets called out, and then the next day has to go, oh, no, that's not what I meant. What I meant was I didn't support it. I don't support it. Not anymore. I did Monday. I don't today.
Let's go to John in Arizona. John, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good. Very good.
Good. My comment was really along the same lines with the Joe Biden statement. How would you compare that to what John F. Kennedy's statement was about putting a man on the moon?
Because it was a possibility. Because it was a possibility that they could explain how they would do it.
The technology was the blueprint was already in place.
Right. The blueprint came out very, very quickly. Here's how we do it.
Right.
We start with the Mercury program. We go to Gemini and then Apollo. And here's how we do it. And here's how we plan to do it in the future. We have some engineering things we have to overcome. They were riding on the seat of their pants. Failure is not an option. If you ever want to read a great book, read that book, and you realize that they would never run the space program today as they ran it back then, because they knew that the astronauts' lives were in jeopardy, because they were riding on the seat of their pants, you know, with funding and material and everything, because there was a time limitation there. But that also was a part of the Cold War too,
right?
But they knew how to get there. They had the, as we have said, what's Biden's plan? What does Biden know? Explain it to us. They were able to explain, the administration was able to explain how they were going to do it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduced the astronauts and they introduced the Mercury program. And then they said, here's what we're going to do after the Mercury program, after we do this. And then Gemini is going to exist. Then we go to Apollo. And then here is the scientific process of how we do that. It was explained. It was in the realm of possibility in that time frame to do so.
Right.
It was just a dedication of resources. With cancer, it's not the same thing. And if it is, explain us to it. Just don't say you're going to cure cancer. If you become president, trying to make the point that we can't do it if the other guy's president, then how will you do it? Explain it. Right. You could look at it and say, we have the engineering, we have the technology to do this.
Yeah,
it's going to take us time to put the infrastructure together.
Now, it would have been impressive if he went to a cancer research center, and he got up there, and a number of cancer scientists and researchers were up there with him, and they said, we believe it's achievable within the next decade, right? And we believe this is and here is why we believe that. Okay, now you've got something, but that's not what this was.
No.
Light years.
Well, no, because I would look at it and I would say, look, we hear all the time that they may be close to some type of cancer vaccine to treat some forms of cancer. And we hear all the time, we've been hearing it for 30 years, oh, they might have a cancer vaccine. Mm-hmm. If there is an incredible breakthrough that we know, believe me, we'll know about it, and then it has to go through the trials and testing and all that, and then part of it becomes experimental drugs. I know somebody who recently died of cancer, and they used one of the experimental drugs that actually, you know, did shrink the tumors, but then had a terrible effect on other organs, and the person basically died from the damage to the other organs caused by the experimental drug that succeeded in shrinking the tumors.
Right.
So that's the problem that you have in any medicine, is the side effects that you get with it. So in that particular case, the person, even though the cancer would have killed them, they ended up a major contributing cause to the death was the experimental drug, which might not have affected other people the same way.
Right.
Well, if you have a vaccine to it, that's a long way away from a vaccine to cure cancer. Mm-hmm. But if they came out and said, we've got the vaccine and we believe we're on the route to do it and we can do it in 10 years, then you would say that this vaccine now is out there. The doctors say we have it. You know, my son had cancer. We know other people's family have cancer. The experts tell me that if we put $10 billion into this particular program, we will have the cure in 10 years. And we talk to and use every major cancer institute, you know, in the country that has agreed with you on it. Then you make that point. Then you move forward. You just don't come out and say, if I'm president, I promise to cure cancer.
Right.
I think reasonable people can agree that that is a bad political move to make.
Right.
And expect that the campaign will correct that later on today. I would be very surprised if they did not correct that by today.
Right. Because they're already, I'm sure, receiving questions. And you're going to have to answer those questions, and that's the pushback. And then it's, well, what, and it could probably his spokesperson. Well, what Mr. Biden was saying is that, you know, that's going to be his mission. That's his endeavor. That's what he'd like to do.
Right.
It's not what he said.
Not what he said. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Got some feedback. Well, you know, Obama pointed him to the Cancer Commission, so maybe he has some inside information. Mm-hmm. Well, then he should state that.
Right. At least on the a very generic or general basis, I guess, that I have reason to believe that we will get this done.
Right. But he said, we're going to, if you say as a presidential candidate or anybody in the medical profession that you will cure cancer, that you have the ability to cure cancer or lead to cure cancer when you're president, or if you're a doctor and say, I will cure cancer, then you need to immediately explain how you will do that.
When you're using it for political gain, you really should spell out how you're going to do that.
Right.
You're looking to gain power by making a promise that you will not be able to keep.
Let us go to Tony in Michigan. Tony, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Hey. You know, I'm guessing that he really doesn't want to be president, and he's got a lot of handlers that he, you know, feels sorry for, and he's realizing that he might win this thing. So, you know, he's got to do something to get his numbers down.
Yeah,
then
I heard tomorrow he's going to visit Area 54.
Are you joking or? You're saying he's actually going to do that?
What?
I didn't hear what he said. I couldn't.
You said he's going to tour Area 51. Is that what you said?
Tomorrow he's going to visit Area 51.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you said Area 54, which made no sense to me.
He's going to call it Area 54.
Okay, we get it. The gaff. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Oh, duh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because we couldn't quite hear him. Because I heard 54, and I think, no, maybe he said 51, and I heard 54.
Okay, no.
Okay, thank you. We
54 is the gaff.
Very good. No, if he says that, that would be funny.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was good.
I'll be visiting Area 54, 55, too.
Because remember, Tucker Carlson a couple of weeks ago said, does Trump not want to win re-election?
Right.
When he was doing it with the whole infrastructure stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what if we have two presidential candidates, you know, an incumbent and the challenger, both neither wish to be president?
Well, that'd be fun.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.